B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy using your member number at the snack bar, Charlie Nance.
Hey, welcome back. Once again, we're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT_golf guy. Back off vacation and getting back into the swing of things this week, leading up to next week's Open Championship at Royal Portrush in Northern Ireland. Lots of ground to cover with freelance golf writer Ron Mintz, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, John Patrick, and we begin with Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, who we caught up with this week on his way back from Pinehurst. So what sort of boondoggle were you involved with in Pinehurst today?
They had a little two-day thing where they call it a U.S. Amateur Preview, and they bring all these groups from other clubs, from Bel Air and the Country Club and Bandon and Marion and Charlotte Country Club. And there's like 150 people, and they bring some media members in, and, you know, they had Gil Hansen, all the people, Brandon Woos there, and they played number two and number four. Now, I didn't get there. It started yesterday. I got here late yesterday afternoon, so I ended up playing number four this morning. Of course, I was on play with John McGinnis and another guy from the USGA. And, you know, they have a little reception party, shootout at the Cradle last night and all that. So it was nice, you know. It's kind of a boondoggle, although you do have to take care of it.
Well, I love it when you slum on number four.
Yeah, I slummed on number four. And I played like a slum dog, what I did.
Well, man, we haven't talked since you covered the Senior Open. I'm going to start there. What was that like?
It was good. You know, it was, who knew Notre Dame had such a good golf course?
Well, that's what I never heard anything about Notre Dame's golf course, like, ever. And then all of a sudden they're holding a USGA event there, and I'm sort of scratching my head.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, Bill Coore and Ben Crenshaw built it almost 20 years ago now, and it was really good. I mean, the kind of place you go around and you look at and you're like, I'd like to play. It's sort of enticing. And, you know, they shot some really low scores, particularly Steve Stricker, but it was, you know, they got, 5 inches of rain in like the 4 days leading into the tournament. So then you let it get soft like that, they're going to be able to take advantage. But it was fun. I had not been around, you know, other than a day or two going up to the SAS Championship. I've been around a seniors event for a while, and I must admit that's sort of my peer group, although some of them are younger than me. So, some of them go see Billy Andrade and, you know, Rocco Mediate and all these other guys, Jay Haas, and catching up with them, seeing Billy Harmon out there. And it was, I enjoyed it. And it was fun. And, you know, South Bend, a little quiet this time of year, but you could tell they're getting ready. Boy, I had been 20 years since I'd been on that campus. What a gorgeous place.
Yeah, that's one of those places that you kind of go, okay, this is what college is supposed to look like, right?
It looks very, very nice. And I went walking through there late one afternoon and looking at the dome and Touchdown Jesus and all that stuff and just wandering through the residence halls and the academic buildings and all that. I just took all the time I wanted to wander around there looking, and it was great what they did for the players. When they checked in, through the Notre Dame football locker room, and they ran them out on the field and did all that. And then they had a makeshift locker room at the golf course, and when the tournament started on Thursday morning, everybody had a Notre Dame jersey hanging in their locker. So they got the full Notre Dame effect, and it was nice.
Ron Green Jr. is our guest taking dead aim. My experience with the PGA Tour champions, it was the Senior Tour when I had dealings with them in Birmingham, and this was in sort of the glory years. Nicklaus was playing out there. Trevino was playing out there. Hale Irwin was dominating the tour at the time out there. But everyone had such a great attitude about the tour at that time. And granted, a lot of them came up in an era where they weren't making near the money that the guys on tour are making now. I think Lee Trevino commented to me it was life's great mulligan for him. Is the vibe still as laid back and as fun and as, I don't know if the word is right, appreciative now as it was then?
That's the sense I got. I mean, you know, it's, you walk around that practice tee and it's amazingly free of clutter. I mean, there are no swing coaches there. There's no entourages. I mean, the closest thing to an entourage would be the Stricker family following Steve around, you know? I think I even wrote in my column, you know, they walk slower than they used to, but they play faster now. Tom Kite's still out there grinding, beating balls, and guys are out there chipping and putting, working on their games. But, yeah, it still has that same sort of feel to it, and they're appreciative. I mean, honestly, I was there, and Golf Digest had a guy there, and then there were some local guys. But that was about all of the media, you know. And it's funny, I had talked to Jerry Kelly earlier this year for something about Steve Stricker becoming the captain of the Ryder Cup team. And when we were talking, he says, when are you going to show us some love and come see us out here? Come cover us once in a while. I said, well, I'd like to. And sure enough, he hops up on the podium after the first round or something. I walk over and he goes, you really showed up.
You were called down from the pulpit in the press room?
And I said, just coming to show you that love I promised I had for you guys. And it was fun. You know, I mean, you just stop and talk to them. And, I think once they sort of get away from it on the big end, a lot of them sort of miss it and realize, like, you know what? I'm going to stop and talk to these guys for a second.
Stricker still has his toe in the water, so to speak, from time to time on the big boy tour, but he just got out on the PGA Tour Champions, and he's got two major championships already this year. And he's not a long hitter. I know Ernie Els is due to come out in October, I think. September, October, I think, is when he turns 50, and I look for him to just dominate that tour. But are we sort of seeing a changing of the guard? I mean, has Bernhard Langer finally found some competition at age 59?
I think Bernhard's 61, isn't he?
I thought he was 59. He's in his 60s now?
I believe so.
Wow.
He's just gone back to being just a guy. I mean, one of the best guys. I mean, he's not maybe dominating the way he has. I mean, Scott McCarron is the classic senior player now that had a pretty good career, had some moments, but didn't quite get it done out there. Now he's found what was missing and, you know, he got off to a horrible start to senior open, came back and played his way right back into contention. I think finished sixth after shooting like 64 on Sunday. So you get a lot of those guys. I mean, I think Stricker, you know, he's just such a good player in so many ways. And if he wants to fully commit, he could just dominate that tour, I think. He still, you know, he feels that tug of going back and playing the regular events, certain places, and he's got the Ryder Cup thing going on too. But, you know, it's funny, this was the third senior open he was eligible for, but the first one he had played in.
No kidding.
So the schedule didn't set up for him earlier. He's really involved in that American Family Championship up there in Madison, which preceded this tournament, the senior open. And so at least it was close this time, and they made it work. And, well, we know he'll be back next year for the senior open. But it's funny, he was sitting there Sunday afternoon in the Champions press conference, and one of the USGA guys says, well, you know, this gets you in at wing foot for the US Open last year. He just popped out, you mean I don't have to qualify? I'm already in.
Rod Greenjinger is our guest taking Dead Aim. Before we hop off the old guy circuit, I don't know if this is really a story or not, but I wanted to touch on it. John Daly was able to get a cart for the PGA Championship, much to a lot of people's chagrin. The RNA sort of put their foot down and said, no, we're not going to play that game for the Open Championship. Look, I love John. I think anyone who has spent any time around John Daly, you're captivated by him. You love him. He's charismatic. He's just a great guy's guy. But he's got, you know, this is a knee that either needs to be surgically repaired or replaced, and I think he just needs to accept that, right?
I think they did the right thing. I know the PGA had its reasons, but I think the RNA did the right thing.
I do too.
It's different than Casey Martin situation. I think John's just gotten old. I mean,
it happens.
I mean, you know, I mean, my shoulder hurts when I play. And, you know, and my head really hurts when I play. And but I just think, you know, yeah, he's got a serious knee problem, but I think you just got to, you know, I don't think it warrants it, and especially having seen poor Rush. I mean, I can't imagine getting a golf cart around there to begin with.
Ron, one more thing, and I know I said we get off the senior circuit, but this popped in my head. I don't know if you've had a chance to watch it yet, but there's the great special on the Golf Channel right now, Tom Watson at Turnberry, and it covers the 2009 Open Championship. And I found myself watching it and then watching it again. And the best way to put it is this. It's sort of like when you're watching the movie Titanic, and you know what's going to happen. There's no way that ship is avoiding the iceberg, but you root for it every single time for it not to happen. And I just can't remember, and this is really what I want to ask you. In your memory of covering golf, did you ever see someone penalized for hitting two shots right in the screws like Tom Watson was on the 18th at Turnberry that day?
You know, I've probably seen something similar, but nothing at that moment or anything like that. I mean, I remember I was not at that tournament. I had gone to Asheville for an anniversary trip, was watching it on that Sunday, and was in a restaurant and saw how the, you know, the last hole of regulation unfolded, and they were getting ready to go to a playoff. And I just looked at my wife. I said, we can go now. I don't want to watch how this ends, because you sort of already knew.
Yeah.
Like, he had thrown everything he had at him. You know, and great for Stuart Sink, who's had a really tremendous career, and sort of gets lost in that story, the telling of that story, because what you remember is Watson lost, and maybe you remember that really bright green shirt Stuart Sink wore that day. But, I mean, that just, there was a, I remember the next day or two afterwards, of course, we were around golf people, but just the conversation, and almost, you could feel the emotional letdown among the public and among fans who thought they were, you know, knew they were on the verge of seeing something really spectacular and unexpected and unique. And then just, you know, we all know what the game will do it to you. And, I mean, boy, it was just, that was what a golf thing that was.
Is there something to backdooring into a major championship that sort of feels hollow to those guys, or do they care? And I'm thinking, you know, of like Bob Golby when DiVincenzo signed an incorrect scorecard at the Masters, or, you know, Stuart Sink, who's not remembered for winning that tournament as much as Watson, being unable to make par on that 18th hole. Do they look back and feel somewhat hollow with that victory?
I would doubt it. I mean, I'm sure Stuart Sink's contracts had some really nice incentives for winning a major championship, you know?
Yeah.
I think Bob Golby's is different, maybe. Because, I mean, again, didn't mean he would not have won otherwise in the playoff, but, you know, it tarnished it. I think you take him any way you can get him in. I think you look at players and, you know, Nicklaus, sort of that Nicklaus equation about how you could take certain guys out and then wait for certain things to happen. And now, I don't know how many of them fell to Jack, but, you know, you did put yourself in the position to let things happen so you can win. You know, I got to look this up. I spent some time with Billy Harmon, you know, Butch's brother and one of the great teachers in the game, and Claude's son, and I just been through a remarkable life, surviving some addiction problems and now a really hard cancer battle. He's back out candidate for Jay. Anyway, he knows so much about golf, and he's got all these nuggets, and I need to look this up. He said in the decade of the 70s, Jack Nicklaus played 40 major championships and finished in the top 10 of 36 of them.
Can I interest you in that record?
Well, he must be pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's why he goes down in history. He's pretty, pretty, pretty good. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. All right, we got to talk about the kids on the PGA Tour the last few weeks that have just dazzled me. I fell in love with Victor Hovland at both the U.S. Amateur last year and then the Masters and the U.S. Open. I fell in love with Wolf at the U.S. Amateur last year and then watching them both play at Oklahoma State. Fell in love with Morikawa, watching him in the NCAAs this year. And, you know, it used to be you came out on tour and it took you a little bit of time to acclimate yourself before you started to do the things these kids are doing. These guys are coming out. Wolf's 20 years old, and he just stared down the PGA Tour like it wasn't nothing but a thing last week.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, all of a sudden, Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, that generation feels like chaperones, don't they?
Wow.
You've got these guys just coming out. They had a little media thing for the Wyndham Championship this week, and Brant Snedeker was there, and we were talking to him. He was a good college player and came out, you know, with some expectations, and he said, I mean, it was totally different the way we came out and trying to work your way in and just, you know, making two couple cuts and seven starts you had and feeling okay about that. But now it's just like, here they come, and they play that, and they've been brought up playing that full-throttle, aggressive golf, you know, I mean, fearless. I mean, it's a different kind of golf that they play now. And, you know, as Snedeker said, I can't play like that. He goes, I would love to have 185-mile-per-hour ball speed and be able to hit my tee shot 340 yards, but I just can't do that. So, you know, you got to be committed to what you can do and not try to chase that. But, I think it just speaks to what they've been able to cultivate in college players now and these really, really good and special talents. I mean, you know, you sort of saw Hovland and Matthew Wolf coming for a while. I mean, Justin Soon maybe. When I just today got to spend some time for the first time with Brendan, who's, you know, another guy who's getting ready to be of that ilk and of that kind of quality of player there. And it's just, it feels like there's almost a open faucet right now with these guys coming out. And the way Wolf just looked at that tournament and, you know, just two images stay with me. One, the way he played that 18th hole, and then the look of total disbelief on Bryson DeChambeau's face at the end. Like, well, how'd that just happen?
I saw someone caption that picture of Bryson DeChambeau with the following, oh, my God, you mean Jim Furyk now has a 325-yard driver? That, I think Wolf may be the most dangerous of all of them because his swing is so unique. And so, you know, it is grooved and he has had it under all sorts of pressure and he's only 20 years old that, you know, dangerous is a person who is like that, who has that sort of unique swing that is their own.
Yeah, I think he knows what to do. I was talking to his Oklahoma State coach Sunday night after he won, Alan Bratton, and he said, you know, when I was watching him, I didn't worry about the swing. A lot of guys got caught up in that. He goes, but, you know, from the top down, it's so solid. He goes, and I could tell you, he said, I would turn my back and listen to him hit balls and say, that's the guy I want to recruit because of the way it sounded. And, you know, it's funny. It was in talking to Billy Harmon the other day, he said, the lesson our dad gave Butch and Craig and all of us was when you got to work with a really top-level player, the best players, said, be careful. Don't coach the grade out of them. Don't focus so much on what they don't do well. Take what they do well and build it. And there's something that separates them. And use that and make strengthen their strength. And, you know, I think that's what they've done with Matthew Wolf. Let him, you know, I mean, again, somebody once said, the Hall of Fame's filled with funny swings.
Get you out of here on this. Ron Green Jr. with the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, our guest taking Dead Aim. I know a year ago you played Royal Port Rush. You were over in Northern Ireland in preparation for the Open Championship. What can you tell us about this venue?
I mean, I thought it's fantastic. I thought it's, you know, the essence of what you think about when you think of Lynx Golf. They have, over the past few years, they built two new holes that are now the seventh and eighth holes, which are just great-looking big holes. And it allowed them to have a sort of a more muscular finish. It had a pretty tepid finish beforehand. It's tight. You're going to have to hit it in the right spots. As David Faraday said, you could hit it in some places where you could lose your dog. And that's true. Like all those golf courses over there, it's so weather dependent. If the wind blows and you get sort of the classic conditions, I'm not talking 25 miles an hour and, you know, drenching rain and 50 degrees, but if you get the wind blowing and it keeps it firm, I think it could be just spectacular. I think it's, you know, there are two stories sort of going over there. One, that they're playing that golf course, and the second is the way they've reacted. It was first open in Northern Ireland or Ireland in 68 years, and you know, they've, until this year, they've never regulated the number of tickets to be sold at an Open Championship. They put a cap on them this year. They sold them out, and they added, I think, another 15,000. So they're expecting about 200,000 plus for the week. And Fort Rush, I can tell you, is it's about like Pinehurst. So it's going to be a big thing. They are so fired up about it. You got to look at sort of the reaction just having the Irish Open at Lahinch last week. I mean, it's a great time over there, and I'm looking forward to it. I think it's something new and fresh, and there is a whole lot of anticipation for this one.
From the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer, that's Ron Green Jr. And when we return, John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, takes dead aim at the latest headlines in the game presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. John Patrick is a longtime friend, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, and of course, Taking Dead Aim's Augusta Bureau Chief. So, John, I would be remiss if I didn't ask, what sort of activities are going on in Augusta right now, specifically construction? 'Tis the season for construction with the men of the Masters. What is the project du jour this year?
Well, obviously, the project du jour is the tunnel under Washington Road. We assume we're looking at both ends of the tunnel when we drive down Washington Road. There does seem to be something going on to the left. There does seem to be something going on to the right. We assume that's the tunnel. There is, I do have a dear friend of mine who lives near the front gate who says he hears an awful lot of whirring noises in the middle of the night and early in the morning behind the front gate. We don't know what that is. There are large cranes on the property that we can see. We assume those are brand spanking new, fully grown trees. So, yeah, you're right. It is the season.
Rumors continue to persist, and I always tell everybody, look, don't listen to them. This doesn't make any sense to me, but I promised I'd ask you anyway. Rumors continue to persist, and maybe it's because of the women's amateur event that took place, about the men of the Masters looking to purchase Champions Retreat. Do you hear anything about that?
Oh, we've heard the rumors. I can't make it make sense.
And see, it doesn't make sense to me either. Why would they do that?
Yeah, why do they? They don't want to own a club that has, you know, other members, and unless they close it and just use it for that week. Yeah, we hear that, but I'm not sure I buy into that rumor. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure I don't buy into that rumor.
I had to ask. John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, is our guest taking dead aim. I know we say this, it seems, every year that a new crop of young guys come out, but you can't help but be blown away by the Hovlands, the Wolves, the Morikawas of the world, can you?
No, you know, I just think it's the evolution. Wait till we see what the next crop does, but I just think it's the evolution of Tiger. What Tiger has wrought to this game.
No question.
You know, that became Ricky Fowler. That became Jordan Spieth. Now it's becoming Victor Hovland, Matthew Wolff, Morikawa. I just think it keeps getting better. I just think they're less and less fearless, or less and less fearful, really. And they just expect to win right from the very beginning, and they don't think twice about it. And I really do just kind of think it's an evolution. And I won't be surprised, you know, the next generation, you know, comes out and wins a major as their first tournament win.
I marvel at, you brought up a good word, fearless, and to go along with being fearless, they have no conscience. It used to be that people used to talk about them coming out on tour, and you had to build up scar tissue. Bad things had to happen to you, and you had to deal with that before you could move on to that next level. These guys come out, and it's as if they don't care that bad things happen to them. They've already accepted it, and they're thinking, I'm going to have more good things happen than bad things, and it's going to more than work out in the wash. And that's their mindset going in.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. As long as I've been doing my show, and with the generational shift that I've had of guests, I've asked just about every one of them that I've had, every player I've had on the show, do you subscribe to the philosophy that you must learn how to lose before you learn how to win? And, you know, almost to a man initially, yep. You know, I don't know, maybe. And now I get with these guys, no, I don't subscribe to that at all. I think the level, I don't think we can say enough about the level of competition in college golf, and frankly, on the Corn Ferry Tour. I think it's better than we can even imagine out there.
I think I saw a stat, and you may have seen it too, that when Tiger was had the lowest scoring average in college golf when he was at Stanford, I guess he was there 2 or 3 years, but his last year he was there, he had the lowest scoring average, and his scoring average was 71.1 or 2. And the scoring average now is, lowest scoring was 69 point something. In less than 20 years, or right at 20 years, John, we've had a two-stroke swing in scoring average. I don't think people realize how huge that is.
Yeah, you think about that. That's eight strokes a golf tournament. And the courses have gotten nothing but longer. And these kids, I think we're finally getting to a point where the distance at which they hit the golf ball is surpassing the distance at which they back up these golf courses. So, you know, and equipment and the such, I just think they're that much better these days.
I find Matthew Wolf to be the most fascinating of all of them. And I fell in love with Hovland last year, and then at the Masters and the U.S. Open. I really like Hovland's game a lot. But there's something about Wolf. I think I saw a captioned picture this year, last week, of DeChambeau's face when he was told that Wolf had eagled the hole. And the caption was, you mean to tell me Jim Furyk now has a 325 driver? You know, beware the guy who has the quirky swing, but he owns it. And so, you know, at this point, pressure's not going to do anything to him. Beware that guy.
Oh, absolutely. And now he's done something that I always find interesting. He won early. He's found success early, I mean really early. And where do we go? And what do we do from here? Do we capitalize on that? Do we keep running on that? I do think he owns a swing. I do think that's in his favor, unlike maybe Ricky or something like that. But now I'll be curious to see, because that was I never expected him to make that putt on 18. I thought, okay, we got three guys in a playoff here, and I've had Morikawa on the program. But there he knocks it in, and it's like, oh my.
John Patrick's the syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, our guest taking Dead Aim. You brought up something interesting about Tiger, and I've said this many times. You know, I guess we're still several years away from Tiger turning 50 and we get the unanimous Hall of Fame induction. But, you know, similar to the way Bobby Jones popularized the game in his era, similar to the way that Arnold Palmer popularized the game in his era, you know, Tiger's done more than popularize the game. He changed the culture of the game. And if there's ever been someone who will leave the game better than he found it, or in a that's even too light a term, I think, it's Tiger Woods. The legacy of Tiger Woods is the caliber of athlete and the caliber of player that is involved in the game now, as opposed to when he got in. Do you agree?
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I think it's so incredibly easy for us. You and I are of an age. We've seen all of Tiger. I never really saw all of Jack. I didn't see all of Arnold. Yeah, we've taken him for granted to some extent. I mean, that's, you know, he is Michael Jordan. He is Mickey Mantle. He is Babe. I mean, he's one of a very few professional athletes. He is Muhammad Ali.
Yes.
He is without the politics. I mean, he is one of a very few athletes that has crossed every barrier imaginable. And, you know, there isn't, it's like the old Arnold Palmer line. You went into the jungle in the Congo and you mentioned Arnold Palmer, they'd know who he is. If you went to the deepest, darkest depths of the earth and you said Tiger Woods, they'd know who he is. I think he's done a lot more than change the game.
You mentioned taking him for granted, and that's a very interesting term. I was talking with my son about this in terms of Brooks Koepka. And look, Koepka dazzles me. He's a fascinating individual in that he truly appears to not give a rat's, you know what, about any event that is not a major championship. So I find that unique and I find that interesting. But Tiger cared every time he teed it up. And I was reminded of this with Koepka, you know, a couple of weeks after the U.S. Open finished his second place, talking about he was baked and burnout and this and that. Tiger wins the Open Championship, then wins the next week, or he wins the PGA, and then the next week wins, you know, a WGC event, and the week after that wins the Canadian Open. And, you know, it was like in 3 weeks, he won three huge events back to back to back. And that's just, we got spoiled with that. That guy played to win every time he teed it up, and he was able to deliver at an astonishing rate. I don't know if we'll ever see that in golf again.
Oh, I don't think we will. I think a lot of factors go into that. I think it's hard to get that way. I think when you're winning $1.2, $1.3, $1.4 million a golf tournament, I think you do get a little fat and happy. I do think you kind of settle in a little bit. I don't know that you and I will see anyone cut from a mold like Tiger. And even if he is cut from a mold like Tiger, can he then go out and produce like Tiger? I don't know what would be harder to feel that way these days when you win so much money, or to be able to produce like that. Again, we took him for granted. It was something more than special, I'm thrilled. I am beyond thrilled that, you know, to date, I've been on site for every one of those Masters championships. And that does not escape me.
Oh, yeah. No, I will never forget being there in 97. I will never forget as long as I live, because I almost didn't go out to the course that day. Someone had offered me badges, and I was like, I don't know if I want to go. And I said, yeah, I'll go ahead and go. And, you know, I was there, and I was there for history. And you're right. It's just unbelievable. John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, our guest taking Dead Aim. I think you and I are going to be of like mind on this, but I wanted to bring it up. I love John Daly. I've met John Daly. I've talked with John Daly. So have you. Chances are we both have spent time with John Daly at the Hooters on Washington Road during Masters Week. Anyone who spends any time at all with John Daly likes John Daly. He's just a fun guy. And I say that because he either needs to get surgery to repair the knee or replace the knee. I'm tired of reading this story. The RNA did the right thing by refusing him a cart. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. I've grown so incredibly weary of John. Everybody's got a story. Everybody's got a problem. Everybody's got an issue. You don't know what anybody else is going through. But I've just grown so weary of it. Fix it or go away or don't care about it, but just kind of stop being a nuisance. I probably really checked out on John at what was it, 2005 U.S. Open at Pinehurst, when he just whacked it a few times. I'm done with it. I'm tired of the story. I'm bored of the story. He's worn out his welcome with me. I just wish he would. Well, I don't know. Again, he's worn out his welcome with me. I get it fixed. Don't get it fixed. But just stop.
Yeah, definitely stop it. And please, whatever you do, do not invoke the name of Casey Martin. This is an entirely different situation. You know, that was, I heard somebody do that the other day, and I just said, whoa, stop. Stop it right there. This is not a Casey Martin situation. This is something that's fixable.
Right, right.
Get you out of here on this. Have you seen the Tom Watson at Turnberry special on the Golf Channel?
I watched about 35 minutes. I guess I missed the first 15, 20 minutes of it. I watched it because I was deep and dear friends with Jim Huber, and Jim wrote a book on it, and Jim loved that whole event. Jim loved that year at Turnberry. So, yeah, I guess to answer your question, I saw more than half of it.
So you heard Huber's voice. I'm glad you brought him up. That was haunting because Huber is off camera but interviewing Tom Watson after each round, especially the first two rounds, and you hear his voice, and it's like, oh, my God, that's Jim Huber. It was stunning to me. But the sensation I had watching it, I was talking with Ron Green Jr. about this earlier, is it's like watching the movie Titanic, and you know what's going to happen. The iceberg is going to hit the ship. You know that for a fact. But you find yourself rooting for it not to happen each and every time. And you know what's about to happen to Tom Watson. And you just go, there's no way the golf gods are going to allow one of their favorite sons to hit two shots in the screws and get punished for it. It's not going to happen again. And it happens again.
Yeah. Well, that's the beauty of that's the magic of the people who put the thing together. Because, yes, you said, you know, why do I have to see him birdie 17? Why do I have to see him hit the drive in the middle of the fairway on 18? Because eventually he's going to grab the 8-iron and put it over the green.
Oh.
And I'm always reminded whenever I see it, and I tend to forget it, and then I see it again, what a horrible putt that was on the 72nd hole. What a horrible putt that was.
He didn't come within 8 inches of a putt from 6 feet.
Awful. And knowing Tom, he probably hated that the most. I mean, it didn't even come close. And everybody gets to say what I guess we all thought and felt at the time, but now it's easy to say 10 years later, that he just didn't have a chance in the playoff. He was just mentally spent, cooked.
Do you think that someone, and I hate to use this term, and I like Stuart Sink a lot, but someone who, you know, quote unquote, backdoors their way into a major, do you think that there's a tinge of regret that they did that or that it worked out that way? Or did they just go, I don't give a damn. My name's on the jug.
I don't think they give a damn. I think they get tired and they get angry by always being asked about it. I know, you know, Dolby is the best example.
Yeah.
He just wore out from being talked about in the 68 Masters. I think Stuart Sink the same way. It just hasn't gone on for 20 or 25 years. I think they do get kind of that attitude, but they do get tired of people asking them about it. You know, do you feel like it's validated? Do you feel like you earned it? So I think they appreciate it. I think they know they want it, but they eventually get tired of everybody else bringing up, you know, the one you stole from Tom Watson.
There he is, the syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, John Patrick. And up next, his work has graced the pages of the sporting news, fansided.com, and many more. Freelance golf writer Ron Mintz takes dead aim at the latest in the game, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Ron Mintz is a freelance golf writer whose work has been featured in the Sporting News, Fansided.com, and many more.
Well, Ron, we haven't spoken in several weeks, and I know that you're as fascinated as I am by people like, you know, Morikawa and Victor Hovland, and specifically Matthew Wolf. That was an unbelievable performance last week from, as it was described on Twitter, Jim Furyk with a 325-yard driver.
Yeah, I heard that, and I actually heard Matthew's news conference this week at the John Deere, and he said somebody put together a clip of his swing side-by-side with Jim Furyk. And he explained it. He said, it may look the same, but Jim doesn't come down like I do, but he clears his body and gets his hips out of the way. So he sort of sounded like Bryson DeChambeau explaining it. But
Well, you know, he's had to explain it so much. But here's what I always get amused by when people get so caught up in what that golf club is doing before it hits the ball. Do not even worry about what it's doing or where it's going, anything like that. If you were to take a heads-on view and you're looking at a golfer at impact position, you're facing them. If you were to match up every golfer, whether it's Jim Furyk, whether it's Jack Nicklaus, whether it's Lee Trevino, whether it's Matthew Wolf, all of them, no matter what their swings look like, at impact, they all match up perfectly. And that's what makes them special, is that impact position. It doesn't matter how it got there. It got there, and it gets there every time.
That's exactly right. Someone told me, maybe my dad when he taught me, he said, it doesn't matter how you get it back, but when you come down, you've got to have a square club face and hit the ball right in the middle of it. And if it looks weird, it doesn't matter. The club doesn't care as long as it hits it right at square. So, yeah, you're exactly right.
You know, Ron, I think I was talking with Ron Green Jr. earlier, and we were discussing how this is, and John Patrick, we were discussing how this is really Tiger's legacy, is these guys. When Tiger came out, he was an anomaly because no one used to come, very few exceptions. I know Crenshaw won early, but with very few exceptions, people didn't come out and immediately contend on the PGA Tour and win. They just didn't do it. Tiger came out, and he wasn't just winning. He was winning majors. And I'll never forget, and I've talked with Curtis Strange about this many times, the first interview where he said losing sucks and coming in second is losing. And Strange looked at him and said, you know, laughed and said, ha, you'll learn. Well, no, Strange and the rest of us learned that this guy was for real. But his legacy to the game of golf is these guys that are coming out, and they're not just fearless. They have no conscience about bad things happening. They don't care about any scar tissue or the ball going in the water or anything like that. They fully expect that they're going to win because they've won, and they've won on big stages and in high-pressure situations. And at the end of the day, I just picture Tiger on a rocking chair sometime, looking back, going, look at all the good that I did. Look at how this game got left because of me.
Oh, you're exactly right. I mean, these kids, the reason they're fearless and they don't have nerves like in the, you know, 20 years ago, some would come out on tour and it'd take a couple of years to get used to the pressure. But these kids have played junior golf since they were 9 years old. And it's like soccer moms used to be talked about. A lot of their moms take them from one town to the other. I mean, I'm from Greensboro, and we have a major junior tournament there each year that's sponsored by the Wyndham. And it's at Sedgefield where they play the PGA Tour. Jordan Spieth played in it when he was a junior, Patrick Reed. I mean, they all know each other. They've been playing together since they were 10, 11 years old. And in to college too. So they've been under that pressure. And of course, Matthew Wolf won the NCAA championship as individual this year. So it's nothing new to them. It's just on a different tour, really.
I'm blown away by these guys. Freelance golf writer Ron Mintz is our guest, Taking Dead Aim. A must follow on Twitter at Mintz Golf. We're heading in to the year's final major. As we're getting near the end of the primarily the golfing season, I know we have the FedEx Cup playoffs when we get back, but How has been your feeling thus far about the new schedule and the compression of the majors like this? I thought I was going to really hate it. I find myself really liking it.
I like it, too. I think when I really realized how much I liked it was the PGA being so much earlier. I've never really been a fan of the PGA Championship. I don't know why. But this year it was like as good as any major we've had. And it seems like we are having a major, whatever, 4 weeks, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, like every 4 weeks we have the Masters and then the Players, then the Masters, then the PGA, then the U.S. Open, and now we're going to have the Open Championship. And it's almost like you're going, gosh, it's going so fast, but I think we're just so used to the schedule normally being elongated. And you know what a monster football is, especially in the southeastern United States where you and I live, once we get to late August and September. And I think we're going to look at it at that point and go, gosh almighty, whoever made this decision was so smart because they got all their business done. They had the stage pretty much to themselves except for baseball, and now they're done, and it's going to work out perfectly.
Yeah, it's great on timing for football, but the thing that I admire the tour for is not only did they put together a perfect schedule, and some tournaments were much better being played earlier than when they used to be because of the course conditions. But we added, two new tournaments this year with the 3M and then it escapes me.
Rocket, whatever was in Detroit and then the 3M in Minnesota.
Right. And plus we've got the WGC going to Memphis this year, where, you know, it used to be at Firestone, so that's coming up. And because, I mean, you know, FedEx has a lot of pull, and it's the FedEx at St. Jude. But the only drawback I've seen to it is a lot of players have, and they told us in advance that, and Mickelson was one of them. He said, look, I hate to disappoint fans, but there have been some tournaments I've played in every year since I've been on tour that I'm not going to be able to play in this year because of the new schedule. I just can't play that many weeks in a row. So if there's a negative, that's it. But I think the positives certainly outweigh the negatives, and I've loved it. But the thing is, Charlie, we're not really going to lose golf. We're still going to have the FedEx playoffs, and then we're going to have the new season starting right after that. So.
Oh, I know, the playoffs, the FedEx Cup is not going to be competing as it has been with weeks 1, 2, and 3 of college and or pro football when you might as well be relegated to page 12, and this is, you know, supposed to be a big deal outside of your majors.
Exactly. Plus, we've got one less tournament in the playoffs this year. We went from 3.
Or from 4 to 3, right.
4 to 3, yeah, to count the tour championship. So, yeah, I don't know if it's the commissioner, Monahan, or who put this together, but it's been a great year. I've loved it.
Ron Mintz, a must-follow on Twitter, at Mintz Golf. He's a freelance golf writer, our guest taking Dead Aim. Back to Matthew Wolf for a second, because you tweeted out something the other day that I was unaware of. And granted, last week I was popping in and out of coverage, and when I was, the volume was down. I wasn't listening to any commentary, so I guess I may have missed this. I knew that when he came out, he picked up Rory's old caddy. But you tell me that lasted exactly 1 week?
That's what he said. Evidently, they just didn't click, and he let PJ Fitzgerald go and picked up, and I can't remember his name now, but I posted a video of his new caddy yesterday, and he said, you know, Matthew letting him caddy that week has changed his life. He was getting ready to quit being a caddy. He didn't have a regular bag, and but Matthew Wolf credits him with the reason he was able to close that tournament out. He said he talked to me the whole time about everything but golf. He said we talked about free agency and NBA all the way around the last round, and we didn't really talk about golf. And he said it put me at ease. So, you know, it's just and PJ, when I posted it, I've gotten so many feedbacks. Matter of fact, that one tweet had over 100,000 reads and 8 hours. I couldn't believe it. I mean, people read that. But I had a lot of feedback from people saying, well, PJ's just a quiet guy. He's he's not everybody's cup of tea, although he's a great caddy. So, you know, you got to have somebody on the bag that you feel comfortable with. And evidently, this is, maybe a relationship like Spieth and Griller. Who knows?
Well, you know, you mentioned him talking about free agency in the NBA all the way around the course. That was one of the things that I always used to hear about Joe LaCava with Fred Couples because you would constantly see them talking all the time. And someone once asked Fred, what are you guys talking about? Is it the next shot? Is it where you want to hit them? Fred looked and said, we've never talked about golf once on the golf course. If it's football season, we're talking about football. If it's baseball season, we're talking about baseball. If it's we're talking about basketball, we talk about everything but golf. And Joey was a huge sports fan and still is a big New York Giants fan. And so, you know, I see him and Tiger jawing going down the fairway, and there's no way in hell they're talking about the next golf shot.
No, and Fred said something I'd never thought about. He said, Joey gives me yardage, but he never clubs me. I don't ask him to club me. I know what to hit, and I know how far I can hit it. So I just need the yardage, and that's it. So, and he said, I don't need him to read putts either. So, they were together a long time. I've got a lot of good memories of him and Joey together.
Oh, I do too. And it's still, I'm never used to whoever's caddying for Fred, and he seems to go through girlfriends or caddy for him, or, you know, for a while it was great. It was like the girlfriend of the month was caddying for Fred Couples. But, he's gone through a bunch, but it just never quite looks right. It's sort of like seeing Tim Mickelson caddy for Phil. It just, I keep waiting to see Bones all of a sudden show up. It just doesn't look right.
I know. I miss Bones. I mean, doesn't seem like he's on TV as much as he was last year. And I've asked some caddies about it. They said, no, they don't think there's any problem. I guess he's just sort of semi-retired.
Ron Mintz, at Mintz Golf on Twitter, our guest taking Dead Aim. I know where Bones is right now. He's at the Scottish Open, but he will definitely be a part of the Open Championship next week. And from all accounts, Northern Ireland is going to be absolutely set ablaze. We may be able to feel the energy all the way through the TV on this side of the Atlantic. I've never seen Royal Portrush. I've talked to people who have played it. Ron Green Jr., who's on the show this week, he played it last year and says it's just spectacular. I'm looking forward to not just seeing a new course for the Open Championship, but new fans at the Open Championship, because you know these Irish fans haven't been making the trek over to Lytham over the years.
No, it's actually the first time since 1951 that they've had the Open Championship there. And it's a beautiful course. It's considered one of the toughest courses in the world. But it's a true links course, and they're going to be facing some incredible rough and tricky greens and high winds. And
Well, you know, something was brought up to me about the weather. I hate to interrupt you, but you brought up the high winds. And this was an interesting observation. The Scottish courses and the mainland of England are somewhat buffeted by the land that is Ireland and Northern Ireland. It is in between the ocean and them. There's nothing to buffet between the ocean and Northern Ireland. Like, when that weather comes in, if it comes in, it could be some of the nastiest stuff they've ever had to deal with.
Well, from what I understand, it's windy all the time. It just matters. It's a matter of how much wind. But, you know, Rory won, actually set the course record at Royal Portrush when he was 16 years old. He shot a 61.
I hate people like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't see why he – well, that's why he's favored in the Vegas is 8-1 right now. He broke the course record when he was 16, and I got a quote from him yesterday that he said, it's the same course that I grew up on. They changed a couple holes, but it's not changed that much. And he said, I grew up there. I played there all the time. And he's very positive that he can win this tournament.
I would think it's almost impossible for him to win, just because the pressure is going to have to be immense for him to win on his home course, where he shot the 61 in front of his home fans. I think him and GMAC and all the guys over there, that it's just got to be an unbelievable pressure-packed week where they want to do so well at this perhaps one opportunity they will ever have. And I just think it's too much for anybody.
Well, GMAC you know, he's back now. He hit that 30-foot putt just to get in the Open. And I was doing some research, and he won two amateur events at Royal Port Rush before he turned pro. He hasn't won as a professional, but he knows the course, and he wanted so bad to play there. He's just 39 years old. I mean, we think G-Mac's an older guy because he won the U.S. Open, what, 2010?
Yeah, 2010, 2011, yeah.
And he got involved with the restaurant business and other stuff, sort of like Ian Poulter, but finally realized that golf is where he should put his priorities, and he's done that. And he's, I look today as we talk, you know, they're having the Scottish Open, and he's playing really well today. So I think Graham McDowell may be the sleeper pick this week. He could certainly close the deal, and he's a great ball striker. The only thing I worry about him is the length, because some of these holes are very long, and they all require you hitting the fairway. So if he can do that, I don't know about the length.
Get you out of here on this. Ron Mintz, freelance golf writer. Follow him on Twitter, at Mintz Golf, our guest taking dead aim. You mentioned GMAC is a dark horse. Give me three people that, and I know you've been doing your homework because you do this kind of thing. Give me three people that you're sitting in the back of your mind right now going, you know what? If I had to lay down a quid or two, it's these three.
Well, I already mentioned Rory, but I'll give you three more. Right. Tommy Fleetwood. He hasn't won in the U.S. yet, but he's won a lot in Europe, and he's got the complete game. He's got the mindset to handle the pressure. Justin Rose is over there right now as we speak, playing in the rain at Royal Port Rush. He's playing a practice round today. He finally left Wimbledon to go over there and practice. And, by the way, John Rahm's at Wimbledon today.
But, is he wearing that shirt again?
I don't know. That looked awful.
Boy, that was terrible.
Yeah, that was a definitely a fashion mistake. But then I picked him last year, and I'm bragging about it because I think I was the only one other than a guy I know in Vegas. Molinari was 51 odds last year, and 2 weeks before the Open, I posted on Twitter I thought he'd win, and he did. And he's gotten even better since then. He can win anywhere.
So in review, you just said Stenson too. Let me give you Ron Mintz's decidedly anti-American picks for the Open Championship. Rory McIlroy, Graham McDowell, Tommy Fleetwood, Justin Rose, Francisco Molinari, and Henrik Stenson. Is there anyone on our side of the pond who has a prayer in the Mintz ledger?
You know, I was thinking about that before we called each other. No, I think this is. And look, I'm all American boy, but I just think that this is such a tough links course, and these guys grew up on it. Rory actually likes to play in the wind and rain. Not that he enjoys it, but he says he's better than everybody else in battling the elements because the other players, it throws them off track. And he thrives on that. So the more wind, the better chance Rory has.
That's my friend Ron Mintz. I'd also like to thank the syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, John Patrick, and Ron Green Jr. of the Global Golf Post and Charlotte Observer for their time and insight this week. A reminder, should you just be catching the last little bit of the show and wonder what all we've covered today, no worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, BPod Studio, Spotify, all the usual podcast outlets, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Featured there right now, links to articles on the PGA Tour relationship with CDB Oil, John Rahm's outrageous couture at Wimbledon, and yes, my latest lottery rejection slip from Augusta National. Hey, weather-wise, typical summer weekend in the Carolinas to tee it up and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.